The original Sanskrit verses will be recited, followed by translation and commentary. Chapter 1. Arjuna's Despondency. Verse 1.
Dhritarashtra uvacha. Dharmakshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyutsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Himakurvata Sanjaya.
Dhritarashtra asked, "What did my sons and the sons of Pandu do, O Sanjaya, gathered together on the battlefield of righteousness, Kurukshetra, with the intent to fight?" The first chapter is preparatory. Dhritarashtra, the blind king, is standing on a hill overlooking the battlefield. In his anxiety, the unrighteous and unjust Dhritarashtra wants to know what is happening, so he asks his counselor and charioteer, Sanjaya, to describe the scene to him. Sanjaya, the narrator of the Bhagavad Gita, is a man of special attainments. He has inner vision and is able to describe exactly what is taking place even though he is far away. Sanjaya thus gives Dhritarashtra a complete account of what is happening on the battlefield. Ignorant and unjust people are spiritually blind. Because of their selfish way of life, they do not accept reality. Dhritarashtra usurped the kingdom of the innocent and righteous, refusing to hand over the lawful rights of his nephews. In every family, society, or organization, the elders must give the younger members their proper rights. When that is not done, frustration develops and creates a reaction in the minds of those whose rights have been snatched unjustly. People forget that their span of life in this transitory world is brief and should be utilized to perform those actions that are helpful on the path to enlightenment rather than to perform actions that will create further bondage. Self-realization is the ultimate goal of life. Not realizing that fact, the ignorant waste the precious moments of life that could be utilized for spiritual progress and for the benefit of others. Selfishness contracts the personality rather than allowing it to expand to universal awareness. Ignorant people like Dhritarashtra live only for themselves and do not show consideration for others. Arjuna was aware that without profound knowledge of the eternal, external and mundane power and wealth are not helpful in fulfilling the purpose of life. The central theme of life is to awake, arise, and gain knowledge. If that is not constantly remembered, one becomes lost in the jungle of the external world. One should always be aware of the purpose of life, for it is only awareness of the eternal that prevents one from being dissipated and distracted by the charms and temptations of the world. When a student like Arjuna constantly remains in contact with his teacher, and a competent teacher like Sri Krishna is teaching him, liberation becomes easy and is attained here and now. Verses 2 through 6.
Sanjaya uvacha. Drishtva tu pandava nikam yudam duryodhanastada acharya mupasangamya raja vachanam abravit. Pashyaitam panduputranam acharya mahatim chamum vyudham drupadaputrena tava shishyena dhimata atrashura maheshvasa bhimarjuna samayudhi yuyudhano viratascha drupadascha maharathah drishtaketuschekitanaha kashirajascha viryavan purujit kuntibhojascha shaibhyascha narapungavah Yudhamanyuscha vikranta uttamaujascha viryavan saubhadro draupadeyascha sarva eva maharathaha.
Sanjaya replied, King Duryodhana, seeing the force of the Pandavas deployed in battle formation, approached his preceptor Drona and addressed him in these words, "O preceptor, see this great army of the sons of Pandu deployed in battle formation by your intelligent disciple, the son of Drupada. Here are brave men like Bhima and Arjuna, with their great bows intent upon war. Yuyudhana, Virata, and Drupada, each commanding 11,000 chariots. Drishtaketu, Chekitana, the virile king of Kashi, Purujit, Kuntibhoja, and Shaibya, the bull among men." Here are the strident Yudhamanyu, the virile Uttamaujas, Abhimanyu, the son of Subhadra, and the five sons of Draupadi, all of them great commanders. Duryodhana sees the army of the Pandavas ready to fight and takes note of its great leaders. He describes their qualities to Drona, his general and teacher in the art of military affairs. Bhima and Arjuna are the foremost leaders of the Pandava army. Along with their brothers, they represent the virtuous aspects of life. Yudhishthira, the eldest of the brothers, represents righteousness. Bhima is a symbol of strength, undisturbed in all conditions. Arjuna is the greatest of all warriors. He has both inner wisdom and external strength. Nakula is able to attain inner peace. Without such peace and tranquility, one cannot have presence of mind. Sahadeva has wisdom that comes from faithfulness, sincerity, and one-pointedness. The five brothers create a unique team, for their qualities are complementary. In this righteous battle of life, Duryodhana, the eldest of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, leads the negative forces. He is an evil, destructive, and unjust leader. On the other side, the five Pandava brothers collectively represent the positive qualities that already live as a treasure within each person. Both the positive and negative forces remain dormant within every human heart, and their characteristics are totally adverse to one another. The negative forces are numerous, shallow, seemingly powerful, misleading, and distracting. Though individually each is very powerful, they conflict with one another, so lack collective power and a sense of unification. Because the Pandavas are well organized, methodical, balanced, and aware of the truth, they will finally become victorious, though they are few in number. A human being need not waste his time and energy gathering great means to fulfill the purpose of life. He can live with a few means if he knows how to utilize those few means correctly and at the right time. That skill is developed as one learns to coordinate his different faculties and modifications of mind. It results from sincere efforts made by the aspirant to develop full clarity of mind, which is the very basis of actions performed successfully in the external world. Mind and action are virtually one and the same. One is a seed, and the other a plant that bears flowers and fruit. It is important for one to be aware both of his strengths and his weaknesses, for without such awareness, success in life remains a mere dream. An aspirant should first learn to strengthen the faculty of discrimination and judgment. That faculty enables him to recognize both sets of qualities as they exist within himself, those that inspire him to attain his goal, and those that create barriers for him and dissipate his willpower. Every sadhaka should first learn to examine and be aware of those two factors. The strength of the Kauravas lies in material might. Their army is much larger, and they have the best weapons and a great treasury to supply their needs. Bhishma and Drona are great military leaders and have never been defeated in battle. In terms of material strength, the Pandavas are inferior in every way. But the Kauravas have a great weakness. Their side is in the wrong and is spiritually and morally corrupt. The Pandavas, by contrast, are far superior in spiritual and moral strength. Bhishma and Drona believe that their duty is to fight on the side of the Kauravas, who hold the throne, but they are aware that their side is unjust. Though they are sure to fight with honor, their hearts and sense of justice lie with the Pandavas. A strong army that lacks moral courage is not capable of successfully fighting a war, for inner courage is the very center of that strength which motivates one towards concentrated effort. A king or hero who possesses the strongest army but does not have moral courage will finally be defeated. But the army that is fighting for a just cause and has moral courage and inner strength to support it will be victorious. One whose mind is imbalanced due to lack of moral courage can use brute force to support his ideas, but he can never remain in peace and happiness. What good is life when one is torn by anxiety, which weakens his inner strength? Such a person experiences defeat in fighting the battle of life, although he has many external means to support him. Parents play a significant role in shaping the lives of their children, and thus the sons of Dhritarashtra follow in the footsteps of their unjust father. When parents are greedy, egotistical, conniving, and unjust, their children consciously and unconsciously develop the same characteristics. Human society suffers as a result of self-created misery, because the elders do not realize that the children trained in an unjust atmosphere will also become unjust. As one rotten fish pollutes the whole pool, so one man can mislead an entire society. Therefore, a king or leader should be righteous and just, and should stand as an example for others to follow. Dhritarashtra is the antithesis of such an example. Many great civilizations have been destroyed by foolish, selfish, and greedy leaders. For instance, Nero was delighted to see his kingdom burning, and in the Second World War, Hitler was obsessed by war hysteria and became imbalanced, thinking of nothing but killing and destroying other nations. Many examples of such atrocities committed by kings and leaders in the past and present could be cited. Why do we forget that this world is a field of action, and that if we learn to perform our actions skillfully and righteously, our journey will become a perennial song? Verses 7 through 9.
Asmakam tu vishishtaye tan nibodadvijottama nayakamama sainyasya sangyarthatan bravimite. Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha krupascha samitinjayaha ashvatthama vikarnascha sauma dattis tathaivacha. Anyecha bahavashura madarthe tyakta jivitaha nana shastra praharanaha sarve yuddha visharadaha.
Now, O Drona, the best of the twice-born, learn of those who are distinguished among us, the leaders of my army. I tell you of them so that you may recognize them. Yourself, Bhishma, Karna, and Kripa, conquerors and victorious ones, Ashvatthama, Vikarna, the son of Somadatta and Jayadratha, and many other brave men ready to sacrifice their lives for my sake, those who attack with many weapons, and all of them experts at the art and science of combat. Chapters 164 through 171 of the Mahabharata give a detailed description of the warriors who are participating in the battle. The foremost commanders of Duryodhana's armies are Drona and Bhishma, who are revered as generals of unparalleled skill. Karna is also a great warrior on Duryodhana's side. Duryodhana calls them conquerors and victorious ones, and others are also mentioned who are ready to die for him. Duryodhana is confident that he has highly skilled and powerful generals in his army. Although these generals are very old, they are strong and skilled in the art and science of combat, knowing all the strategies of battle. Bhishma is 170 years old, and Drona is 90 years old, but despite their ages, these veterans fight fiercely. The modern mind might take these ages as an exaggeration in the same way that everyone used to laugh at scientists when they began preparing to go to the moon. There is nothing that is impossible, however, for one who practices sanyama, self-discipline, on all levels. It amazes the modern mind that the ancients knew the methods of prolonging the span of life and led a healthy life of more than 120 years. The way in which they used to think, eat, and practice discipline kept them both healthy and wise. But we do not find such examples in our modern world. Today there are people who live 90 to 100 years, and occasionally up to 115 years, but they remain bedridden invalids and are usually senile. This clearly shows that our lives are not correctly organized. We have forgotten the secrets by which we can arrest the aging process. Bhishma and Drona were great yogis who knew the secrets of perpetual youth as well as the technique of dying. They could drop their bodies willfully according to their desire. As a result of technological attainments, modern man has been able to acquire the means for living comfortably, but external comfort without inner strength is not enough for one to lead a healthy and useful life. If we read the conclusion of the Mahabharata, we will find that Drona and Bhishma, the greatest of all warriors, lose the war because in their heart of hearts they know that they are fighting for an unjust cause. One who does not do his duty wholeheartedly and with full attention is not successful. Drona and Bhishma fight for Duryodhana because of their loyalty to the king, but their hearts are with the Pandavas. In such a serious division of loyalties within and without, it is not possible to win a battle, whether that battle is taking place within oneself or in the external world. When one acts in a manner contradictory to what he feels and thinks, he becomes disoriented. In such instances, neither success in the external world nor peace within is possible. The first task for a seeker of truth is to understand the words coordinated effort. This means that one should always follow the dictates of his conscience. He should not do anything that does not agree with his conscience. When a normal human being considers doing something, his conscience helps him to choose what he will do by placing the consequences of his actions, good and bad, helpful and damaging, right and wrong, in front of him. And if he has a firm will, he will be able to carry out the action he chooses. Sankalpa Shakti, willpower, is a powerful force in the human being. If it is not utilized, there will always be failure, regardless of the external efforts made and the means applied. True sadhakas are taught to be vigilant, to not allow the light of Sankalpa Shakti to be diminished or extinguished. If the knowledge of that light is protected and allowed to grow, the aspirant becomes self-reliant, and self-reliance is an essential virtue. Self-reliance, courage, a one-pointed mind, and determination all unite to build the force of Sankalpa Shakti, without which the aspirant cannot fearlessly tread the path of life. Verse 10.
Aparyaptam tadasmakam balam bhishmabhirakshitam paryaptam tvidametesham balam bhimabhirakshitam.
This force of ours, supervised by Bhishma, is large but inadequate. However, the force of these Pandavas, supervised by Bhima, is small but adequate. Although Duryodhana has superior strength, he has an inferiority complex that shows itself in his jealous feelings toward the Pandavas. He knows he is fighting a war for unjust and unrighteous motives. When enveloped in selfishness, even the mightiest cannot be victorious, for inner strength alone motivates one to successfully fight in the battlefield of life and to skillfully perform his actions and duties. By contrast, selfish motivation weakens the will and inner strength. One who is selfishly motivated cannot persuade the conscience, which judges one's intentions before he decides to act, to take his side. Such a human being continually creates a division within himself by ignoring his conscience and continuing to follow the path of unrighteousness. He knows what truth is, but his actions are motivated by selfishness, greed, and possessiveness. Duryodhana's situation is exactly like that. His inner strength is weakened by the division he has created within himself. Although Duryodhana has the stronger army and skilled generals, he is unsure of his victory. When a king suffers from an inferiority complex, he may act as though he is superior, but such a person actually feels inadequate underneath his false show of bravado. There is no such thing as a superiority complex. There is only one complex, and that is inferiority. When one is aware of his weaknesses, but does not know how to rid himself of them, he creates a shield for his protection. When one does not want to accept and confront his weaknesses, he puts on a false front and acts as though he is superior. Such people actually think they are superior to others because they have not learned to accept things as they are. A sense of superiority is like a house of cards that can crumble at the touch of a finger. Everyone has weaknesses. Wise is he who acknowledges his weaknesses and works steadily to remove them and to replace them with the essential virtues that strengthen him and make him brave, fearless, and truthful. There is always a war between the forces of virtue and vice. Weakness may appear to be strong because it persistently resists accepting and acknowledging its reverse side. Virtue, however, has genuine strength because it is a product of a balanced mind. Weakness arises from imbalance, whereas balance is the true source of strength. Even though Duryodhana has the most powerful army and the best generals, still he lacks confidence, and when one is not sure of himself, it is difficult for him to be victorious. Confidence comes from inner strength, from the inner conscience that constantly judges one's thoughts, feelings, desires, and motivation. One's conscience protects him from the traps laid by his weakness. Verse 11.
Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avasthitaha bhishma meva virakshantu bhavanta sarva evahi.
Standing according to your assignments in the divisions and at all the major entry points of the battle formation, all of you should surround and protect the commander-in-chief, Bhishma, alone. Why does Bhishma, the leader of Duryodhana's army, need protection? Because if the commander of the army is lost, the war will be lost. Bhishma, however, has a special power. No man can kill him. It is difficult to believe that anyone who is born is not subject to death, and Bhishma, though very powerful and skillful, is no exception. Among the many fears of Duryodhana is the fear of losing Bhishma, and that fear prompts him to order his army to protect Bhishma with all its might. It is fear that creates defenses and consumes a vital part of one's energy that could be used in positive ways. Although Bhishma is fighting for Duryodhana, it is not with full-heartedness. Bhishma's and Drona's loyalty to Duryodhana is merely superficial and external. They fight with the knowledge that Duryodhana's cause is unjust. These two great warriors know that Duryodhana will be defeated no matter how much resistance he presents and regardless of the fortifications he is able to create with the help of his brute strength. Energy and strength exist in many forms and have varied expressions. For example, electricity can be used both for cooling and heating, and a person's energy can likewise be used for either creativity or destruction. It depends on what one chooses and how much skill one has in using his energy. Duryodhana is very powerful, but his power is destructive. The Pandavas, in contrast, represent that stream of energy that is creative and leads one to the source of consciousness. Verses 12 through 18.
Tasya sanjanayan harsham guru vruddha pitamaha simmanadam vinadyochaihi shankam dadmau pratapavan tata shankascha bheryascha panavanaka gomukhaha sahasaivabhya hanyanta sa shabdastumulo bhavat. Tatashvetair hayer yukte mahatis yandane sthitau madhava pandavaschaiva divyau shankau pradadmatu. Panchajanyam hrishikesho devadattam dhananjayaha paundram dadmau mahashankam bhimakarma vrukodaraha. Ananta vijayam raja kunti putro yudhishthiraha nakula sahadevascha sughosha manipushpakau. Kashyascha Parameshvasaha, Shikhandicha Maharathaha, Drishtadyumno Viratascha, Satyakischa Parajitaha, Drupado Draupadeyascha, Sarvashaha, Prithvipate, Saubhadrascha Mahabahu, Shankan Dadmu, Prithak, Prithak.
Causing Duryodhana great joy, the elder of the Kurus, the grandfather Bhishma, a man of splendor, loudly roaring a lion roar, blew the conch. Then conches, kettle drums, tabors, drums, and trumpets suddenly blared forth, and that sound was tumultuous. Then, standing in a great chariot drawn by white horses, Krishna and Arjuna also blew their celestial conches. Krishna, the Lord of Senses, blew his conch, named Panchajanya, and Arjuna, the winner of wealth, blew his conch, named Devadatta. Bhima, he of fierce deeds, blew his great conch, named Paundra. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew the conch Anantavijaya. Nakula and Sahadeva blew their conches, named Sughosha and Manipushpaka, respectively. And the king of Kashi, the excellent archer, as well as Shikhandi, the great charioteer Drishtadyumna, Virata, and the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, and the sons of Draupadi, each and every one, O king, the mighty-armed son of Subhadra, they all blew their conches, each his own. The leaders of both armies blow their conches, and the armies beat their drums and blow their trumpets to inspire their own soldiers. First, Duryodhana's army creates a fierce sound to terrorize the Pandavas, but the Pandavas' army returns a mighty sound with full confidence. The gestures and sounds that are created to frighten the opposition have two possible origins, fear and confidence. When human beings are frightened, they do not create music, but frightful sounds. Sri Krishna and Arjuna, who are confident of their strength, create a melodic sound. In fact, the whole of the Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna that creates a beautiful melody, a divine song. The sounds created by Duryodhana's drummers are violent. They are created out of excitement, fear, and anxiety. Their sound does not compose any poetry or song, for it has its origin in the destructive aspect of Shakti, the primal force that resides within. That primal force has two aspects. One is merciful, gentle, and kind. The other is cruel, brutal, and annihilating. The war represents the inner conflict between the annihilating and merciful powers within each person. Verse 19.
Sa ghosho dhartarashtranam hridayani vyadarayat nabascha prithivim chaiva tumulo vyanunadayan.
The tumultuous, reverberating sound tore the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra, echoing all around the heaven and earth. The fierce sounds of the Pandavas' conches frighten Duryodhana and magnify his feelings of guilt. Guilty is he who does not acknowledge his mistakes, for he does not believe in being corrected and is not open to helpful suggestions from any quarter. He neither listens to the voice of his conscience nor to the advice of his counselors. He closes all the doors of learning, isolating himself in the fortress of his own egotistical views. He does not want to know anything, and he goes on feeding his ego by creating a false reality for himself. Verse 20.
Athavyavasthitan drishtva dhartarashtran kapidvajah pravrutte shastrasampate dhanurudyamya pandava.
Now Arjuna, the son of Pandu, who had Hanuman as the emblem on his flag, seeing the sons of Dhritarashtra standing well organized as the weapons had begun to be hurled, raised his bow. In the Ramayana, a more ancient epic than the Mahabharata, Hanuman plays a vital role in defeating the demon Ravana. Hanuman is one of the greatest symbols used by warriors, for he had enormous strength. In the Mahabharata, the symbol of Hanuman also plays a prominent role. The flag that is hoisted on Arjuna's chariot has a monkey, the symbol of Hanuman, on it, and this inspires Arjuna's army and terrifies the army of his enemies. Hanuman was the greatest of all devotees, a sadhaka and a brahmachari, with single-pointed devotion for Lord Rama. Hanuman's one-pointed devotion gave him unparalleled strength and assurance of attaining his goal. The wise teacher encourages his students to develop such one-pointedness. Arjuna's devotion is exactly like that of Hanuman. He is with his Lord and guide, Sri Krishna, all the time. He is learning to apply all his resources with full sincerity and might. That is why he is called Arjuna, one who makes sincere efforts. In preparing for the war, the symbol of Hanuman on Arjuna's flag inspires him and helps him to be confident. He knows that he is fighting a just war and that the greatest of yogis is his teacher. His self-confidence is enormous, but, as we shall soon see, Arjuna is about to lose all his confidence and become despondent. How is it possible for one to confidently prepare himself for a fierce battle and then fall into a state of despondency in such a short time? We see here that a human being, no matter how positive he feels, can slip down to the valley of sorrow as a result of a single thought that draws his attention to the body, which is weak. Even after attaining samadhi, a state of transcendent consciousness in which all of one's questions are answered, one comes down from the height of tranquility, for even the practice of samadhi is done in the cage of human limitation. When we study the lives of great spiritual leaders, we find that a moment comes when they are swayed from their heights and become absorbed in body identification. For example, Buddha decided to follow the path of renunciation and left his family. Nonetheless, he soon returned home to see his infant child once more, but then he remembered his resolve and again rushed back toward the Rajgiri forest. Realistically, one should understand that although the highest call of life is the inner urge to know the ultimate, the call of the charms and temptations of the external world is very powerful and can create obstacles on the path. Therefore, a sadhaka should not be proud or complacent about what he has attained. Even to the last breath of sadhana, attachments to the world and to relationships are prone to disturb the sadhaka. Verses 21-25.
Rishikesham tada vakyam idaha mahipate Arjuna vacha Senayor ubayor madhye ratham sthapaya mechuta yavadeta niriksheham yoddukama navasthitan kairmaya saha yoddhavyam asmin ranasamudyame yotsyamana navekshyeham ya etetra samagataha Dhartarashtrasya durbuddhe yuddhe priyachikirshavaha Sanjayo vacha Evamukto rishikesho gudakeshena bharata Senayor ubhayor madhye sthapayitva rathottamam Bhishma drona pramukata sarveshamcha mahikshitam Huvacha partha pashyaitan samavetan kuruniti
That, O King Dhritarashtra, Arjuna addressed these words to Krishna, Lord of the senses. O steadfast one, place my chariot between both armies. While I observe these who are standing here with whom I am about to fight in this battle, I would like to see these who have gathered here to fight, who are desirous of doing the wishes of the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra in battle. Then, O descendant of Bharata, thus addressed by Arjuna, the conqueror of sleep, Krishna, Lord of the senses, having placed the best of the chariots between both armies, in front of Bhishma and Drona and of all the kings, said, O son of Prita, see all these Kauravas gathered together. Arjuna requests Sri Krishna to drive his chariot between the two armies so that he can observe the strength of each army and at the same time estimate the strength of his own army. The aspirant who lacks a keen sense of observation is not aware of his strengths and weaknesses, and thus can be swayed by his imbalanced emotions. In the same way that Arjuna prepares for war, the aspirant should prepare himself before he starts to tread the path of sadhana. If the sadhaka is not prepared to tread the path of sadhana, disease, despair, fear, and depression will create obstacles for him. In the Katha Upanishad, The chariot is likened to the body, and the horse is pulling the chariot to the senses. As the metaphor is applied here, Arjuna represents the mind, and the driver represents the higher buddhi. The prime nature of the mind is to consider, shall I do it or not? When the mind learns to seek the advice of buddhi, the student ceases to be fickle-minded, learning instead to make proper determinations and decisions in all circumstances. In this verse, Sri Krishna is referred to as Achyuta, and the name Gudakesha is used for Arjuna. Achyuta means one who is not fickle, and Gudakesha means the conqueror of sleep. These words denote that the teacher should be firm and consistent, and the student should never allow himself to be subject to sloth, inertia, or laziness. Arjuna is an embodiment of a good sadhaka, and Sri Krishna a competent teacher. For lack of decisiveness, one becomes fickle, and for lack of awareness, one is caught by inertia and sloth. These are serious obstacles that do not allow the student to progress.
Verses 26 through 28. Putran, Pautran, Sakinstata, Swashuran, Surudaschaiva, Senayo Rubhayorapi, Tan Samikshya Sakaunteya, Sarvan Bandhun Avastitan, Kripaya Paraya Vishto, Vishidan Idamabravi. Arjuna Vacha Drishtvemam Swajanam Krishna, Yutsum Samupastitam.
There the son of Prita saw those who were like fathers and grandfathers to him, teachers, uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, as well as companions. Fathers-in-law, as well as friends in both armies, seeing all those kinsmen standing there, Arjuna, the son of Kunti, possessed by a pitiful mood, feeling very sad, said these words, I see these kinsmen present here with the intent to fight. When Arjuna inspects the opposing army, he sees that among its leaders are his teachers, cousins, fathers-in-law, and other close relatives and friends. He suddenly becomes affected by his attachment to his relatives, sinks into a self-centered pool of sorrow, and forgets his purpose. Attachment is the greatest source of misery. The strands of attachment bind the sadhaka and weaken his determination, will, and inner strength. He forgets the ultimate goal of life and becomes a victim of mundane and transitory relationships. In such situations, aspirants may begin to argue with their teachers. Such an exchange can be helpful on the path of sadhana, for it becomes a process of learning if it occurs between a sincere student and a wise preceptor. The dialogue helps one to confront and analyze his weaknesses. Sri Krishna, a perfect yogi, is aware of Arjuna's inner turmoil and allows him to express himself. When one experiences the grief and sorrow that arise from attachment, he does not remain wise, and the unwise cannot discriminate right from wrong. Because of his involvement and attachment, Arjuna becomes confused and loses his objectivity. Thus he cannot reach impartial conclusions and act justly. One who is enveloped in attachment is incapable of knowing or deciding things correctly. One who is attached to the mundane life argues irrationally and is unable to understand the consequences of his actions. Verses 29 and 30.
Sidanti mamagatrani mukham cha parishushyati vepathuscha sharire me roma harshascha jayate Gandivam srausate hasta tvakchaiva paridahyate nacha shaknom yavasthatum brahmati vachame manaha.
My limbs are frozen, my mouth is drying up, my body trembles, and hairs stand on end. Gandiva, the great bow, is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. Nor can I stand up. My mind is, as it were, whirling. Even the finest among men can sink into the depths of sorrow. There are many examples of great seekers on the path of light who experienced moments of grief and sorrow during which they lost touch with the higher reality and became overwhelmed by the stronger power of mundane attachment. For instance, the sage Vasishtha became despondent when he lost his son, even though birth and death had already revealed their secrets to him. The nervous system cannot handle such a flood of negative energy. Thus the body starts trembling, shaking, and jerking, and one loses all control of the body. It is sorrow, anger, and fear that create such symptoms. Sorrow, infatuation, and other emotions weaken the body and sap the physical strength of even a healthy man. A black bee has tremendous power, enabling it to bore a hole through wood. But when the bee becomes infatuated with the fragrance of the lotus blossom, it is unable to escape from the closing lotus petals that hold it captive after the sun sets. The history of mankind is a testimony to the fact that infatuation for alcohol, an imbalanced attitude toward sexuality, and other addictions weaken human strength. The sorrow that comes as a result of being addicted to objects of the world has power to change the tissues of the body and can turn a trim and taut figure into a flabby one. The endocrine glands react instantly to stressful situations, and so, during a state of anxiety and depression, certain symptoms are noticed. For example, dryness of the mouth occurs because the salivary glands do not secrete sufficiently. If one receives shocking, sorrowful news about someone he loves, that shock may make him cry, and the body may begin to shake and tremble. Evenness of breath and the motion of the lungs, which play a vital role in the regulation of the body, are disturbed. Then the heartbeat becomes irregular, and the blood supply to the brain is inadequate. These are some of the ways that infatuations and emotions interfere with the body's normal responses and have the power to create an imbalance in the body. Because of such emotional imbalances, the body starts building up toxins, and the pores lose their capacity to expel the toxic buildup. That disturbs the equilibrium in two systems of the human body: the system that purifies and cleanses the body, the pores, lungs, kidneys, and bowels, and the system that nourishes the body, the liver, spleen, heart, brain, and so on. Arjuna is agitated and despondent. He is caught up in his attachments and in the emotions that ensue when attachments are threatened. He has lost his mental and emotional equilibrium, and he has lost touch with the source of strength within. That kind of regression is a very serious stumbling block on the forward journey. Human weaknesses are dangerous and destroy human endeavor if they are not put aside and if they are not dealt with using inner strength and pure reason. If one is addicted to drugs such as heroin, and the drugs are suddenly withdrawn, he experiences severe debilitating symptoms. In a similar way, when one is strongly attached to an object in the external world and loses or anticipates the loss of that object, he suffers physical symptoms such as those experienced by Arjuna. From the yogic perspective, attachment and addiction are equivalent terms. Both lead to emotional and physical suffering. Many mental and physical disorders are the result of attachment to the objects of the world. If the object to which one is attached is threatened, one becomes afraid, and because of the fear of losing the object, he loses mental balance. An imbalanced mind is a source of much misery, and attachment is the cause of all misery. Modern psychologists and physicians are becoming aware that psychological disorders are the main source of many physical diseases and imbalances. Self-created misery is the source from which psychosomatic diseases spring. But that which originates in the mind and is expressed through the body is difficult to cure with medicine. Many of the ills of human life cannot be alleviated by drugs and other physical means. Modern psychologists need to develop better methods for treating psychosomatic disorders, for analysis remains ineffective and psychological imbalances continue to disturb the physical condition of many clients. Mind and body are in the habit of reacting to one another. Physical pains are recorded, stored, and memorized by the mind. Therefore, the mind is bound to be affected by physical pain. Physical diseases disturb the nervous system and mental life, but the problems that originate in the mind and then reflect on the body are even more serious. When the mind, the center of sensitivity, feeling, thoughts, and desires, is disturbed, the body is tormented and experiences innumerable sorts of pain. The medicines prescribed to treat mental disorders and diseases caused by mental disturbance do not resolve the underlying disturbance. They merely dull the sensitivity of the nervous system. The pain remains, but for some time, one does not experience it. Such medicines are not cures, but only temporary means for soothing the sufferer. The body and mind should be thoroughly understood as one unit. Only then will effective means of treatment be developed. One can attain a profound comprehension of mind-body interaction by studying the nature of each from different angles. To understand the body, one should study the body's needs and capacities while eating, sleeping, working, and during times of physical attraction toward others. The inseparable link of these two realities, physical and mental, is pranic energy, called the breath of life. Verses 31-39.
Nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava, na cha shreyonu pashyami hatva svajanam ahave. Na kankshe vijayam krishna, na cha rajyam sukhani cha, kim no rajyenu govinda, kim bhogair jivitenava. Yeshamarthe kankshitam no rajyam bhoga sukhani cha, ta ime vasthita yuddhe pranans tektva dhanani cha. Acharya, pitaraha, putraha, tathaiva cha pitamahaha, matula, shvashura, pautra, shyala, sambandhinastatha. Etan nahantum icchami gnatopi madhusudana, api trailokya rajyasya heto kimnu mahikrite. Nihatya dhartarashtran nakka pritisyajanardana, papameva ashraye dasman hatvaitanatatayana, tasman narhavayam hantum dhartarashtran subandhavan, svajanam hi katam hatva sukhinasyama madhava. Yadapyete na pasyanti lobopa hatachetasaha, kulakshaya krutam dosham mitra drohecha patakam, katam nagneyam asmabihi. Papa dasman nivartitum, kulakshaya krutam dosham prapashyadbhir janardana.
And I see inauspicious omens, O Krishna. Nor do I see any good accruing upon killing my own kinsmen in the battle. I do not desire victory, O Krishna, nor kingdom, nor comforts. What use do we have for kingdom, Lord of the senses? And what to us is enjoyment of pleasures, or even life itself? They for whose sake we might desire a kingdom, pleasures, and comforts are standing here before us on the battlefield, having abandoned their very lives and wealth. Teachers, father-like elders, sons as well as grandfathers, uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law, and other relatives. I do not wish to kill them, even if they are killing me, O destroyer of illusion, not even for the sake of the kingdom of the three worlds. How then could I do so merely for the sake of this earth? What pleasure can we derive by killing the sons of Dhritarashtra, O faultless one? Only sin can accrue to us by killing these felons. Therefore, it does not behoove us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, our kinsmen. How can we be happy after killing our very own relatives, O Krishna? Though the Kauravas' minds are impaired by greed and so are not seeing, the fault accrues by the destruction of the family and the sin in the desire to injure friends. How then should we not know enough to turn away from this sin as we are able to see the fault that accrues upon the destruction of the family, O Krishna. It is said that the devil uses scripture for his own convenience. Likewise, Duryodhana, the wicked son of an unjust father, applied all possible means to justify his stand. He even exploited religious sentiments so that the kingdom would not have to be returned to the Pandavas. Many political leaders do not hesitate to quote scriptures and in other ways exploit religion in order to attain selfish ends. Many irreligious leaders thus exploit the innocent in the name of God and religion. Dhritarashtra, the blind father of Duryodhana, asked Sanjaya to persuade the Pandavas not to take up arms. Sanjaya gave a long sermon, saying, O Dharma, Yudhishthira, the eldest brother of the Pandavas, you are the best of men and would never violate the moral law of society. You have the capacity to forgive the sins of the Kauravas. It certainly does not behoove you to be cruel, to fight a fierce war, and to kill your cousins and teachers. Sanjaya advised the Pandavas to become renunciates and suggested that begging would be superior to fighting the war. He gave that religious sermon on renunciation just before the war was about to be fought, and Arjuna's dejection and despondency were brought about by it. Suggestion creates a hypnotic effect, and the hypnosis diminishes the faculty of discrimination. People in general are very much influenced by the suggestions of others, and suggestion is, in fact, the very basis of modern education. It is the wrong method of education, for one loses the ability to inquire and just follows what he has been told without logic and reasoning. If we learn how to free ourselves from the impressions received by suggestive education, we can then independently learn that which is useful, healthy, and valid. There are higher and superior methods of learning and exploring, and there are many dimensions of knowledge that are as yet unexplored by the vast majority of people. Brahma Vidya, the knowledge of absolute truth, is the highest knowledge, and direct experience is the best means of gaining that knowledge. Direct experience is by far the finest means to attain knowledge in any dimension of life. One should learn through direct experience, for that alone is valid. All other methods are incomplete and therefore misleading. An aspirant should carefully choose a path for himself by examining his capacities, abilities, and strengths. He should avoid suggestive ideas and thus not become distracted and dissipated. Reading books that dissipate and distract one's mind should be avoided. Conversing with those who are not on the path and living in the company of those who do not practice sadhana also lead to dissipation. One must encourage the faculty of discrimination within in order to counter such negative influences. Seeking advice from a competent teacher is helpful, for a wise teacher is experienced in receiving knowledge directly, and such unalloyed knowledge is free from the fanciful suggestions and influences of ordinary people. Arjuna is deluded by his attachment and loses sight of his duty and the aim of life. He begins to identify with Duryodhana and imagines that by fighting this righteous war, he will be behaving exactly like Duryodhana. External influences can lead one to think in such an illogical way, and thus have a disturbing effect that can change the whole course of one's life. Not delusion, but constant awareness would be a suitable thought for Arjuna. That would soothe his heart and bring him to the right path. All of Arjuna's arguments are irrational because they are the outpourings of the influences of the strongest of all enemies, attachment. When one is attached, he isolates himself from the world and thus deprives himself from listening to the voice of his conscience and to his preceptors. The faculty of discrimination does not then function, and one rationalizes to justify his emotional state. He will then never reach his goal, for he has lost all sense of direction. In modern life, we see most people selling their ideas, trying to prove that they are right. To support their notions, they quote the scriptures or seek other justification. Such a person gives many suggestions to his own mind, for before one can seduce others, he must first seduce himself. Modern man is blind. He does not understand the purpose of life. He sees only the imaginary world that self-suggestion and the suggestions of others have created. He desires quick results and wants to do things in his own way, without consideration for others. There are four types of people in the world: those who are time-oriented, those who are goal-oriented, those who are life-oriented, and those who are purpose-oriented. In today's world, we find mostly time-oriented people. They are selfish, narrow, and conceited. Time-oriented people do things to fulfill their selfish ends without purpose or goal, and are not aware of the consequences of their actions. Time is fleeting for them. They have no sense of tomorrow, so they demand immediate gratification. They react impulsively to external stimuli to fulfill their desires for sensory gratification. They take advantage of others. They cannot think beyond their own concerns. Slightly higher are those whose lives are directed towards certain goals. These goals, however, are related to the pleasures of the mundane and temporal world. But at least these people have goals and do not act impulsively, like time-oriented people. Higher still is the life of those who try to remain in peace and to live in harmony. They believe in coexistence as a way of life, so they do not like to disturb the equilibrium of others, nor do they desire to possess unlawfully the wealth and property of others. But the highest path is followed by those who are purpose-oriented, and who direct all their energies and use all their resources to fulfill their single purpose: self-realization. Duryodhana is time-oriented and is not at all conscious of the purposefully oriented life. Arjuna, by contrast, is expected to be an embodiment of a purposefully oriented life. But he slips from the highest to the lowest level because of the influences of attachment. The physical and psychological symptoms that are experienced by Arjuna make it clear that his objection to fighting is not based on non-attachment and renunciation, but on intense emotional reactions due to his attachment. A student sometimes talks as though he has the wisdom of a great master, whereas his behavior shows that he is under serious strain and stress, and that his mind is imbalanced. Such wisdom is not part of any knowledge, but is described by Patanjali as false knowledge. Many people are capable of delivering a sermon full of wondrous statements of wisdom, but one has to examine through which channel that wisdom is coming. Wisdom of speech is not the same as true wisdom. When the body is in a state of equilibrium, real wisdom finds its way. Mind and body are the instruments that create melodies that help one to be tranquil and enable him to sing the eternal song of life. But when there is disharmony, and the mind and body are not tuned in a coordinated way, they create a cacophony that is unpleasant to the human ear and distracting to the mind. Listening to the words of wisdom from the mouth of Arjuna, Sri Krishna knows that this wisdom is mere escapism and not the wisdom that inspires one to tread the path of life and light. Verses 40 through 45.
Kulakshaye pranashyanti kuladharma sanatanah, dharme nashte kulam kritsnam adharmo bibhavatyuta. Adharma bibhavat krishna pradushyanti kulastriyah, sri shudushta suvashneya jayate varna sankara. Sankaro narakayaiva kulagnanam kulasyacha, patanti pitaro hyesham lupta pindodakakriyah. Doshairetak kulagnanam varna sankara karakaihi utsadyante jati dharma kuladharmascha shashvatah. Utsanna kuladharmanam manushyanam janardana narake niyatam vaso bhavati tyanushushrama. अहो बत महत्पापं कर्तुं व्यवसिता वयम् यद्राज्य सुख लोभेन हन्तुं स्वजनमुद्यता.
Upon the disappearance of family tradition and rules of conduct, vice and unrighteousness subdue the entire family. When subdued by vice, O Krishna, the women of the family become corrupted. When the women are corrupted, O ruler of your clan, there occurs confusion of the social structure. Such confusion leads only to hell for the whole family, including those who have destroyed the family. Even the ancestors fall into hell, since the rites and observances for preventing them from doing so are no longer performed. Because of these faults of the destroyers of the family, which cause the confusion of the social structure, the perennial national traditions, as well as the family traditions, are uprooted. When the family traditions of human beings are thus uprooted, O Krishna, these human beings have to dwell in hell indefinitely. So we have heard in the tradition. Oh, alas, we are embarking upon committing a great sin as we are preparing to kill our own kinsmen out of greed for kingdom and comfort. Woman is the builder of society. The institution of family life is her original idea. She is its architect, and she has remained the custodian of the cultural heritage. Even today, in Hindu, Jewish, Irish, and several other cultures, the woman is the center and organizer of the family. It is she who plans the disciplinary program for the children. A society that does not give due place to women goes toward degeneration and disintegration. And if a society starts acting in an irresponsible manner, it is because the family institution has become disturbed. Arjuna, a brilliant thinker and warrior, plunges into grief when he foresees that the heroes killed in the war will leave innumerable widows. When the population becomes imbalanced, having more females than males, it is difficult to maintain loyalty toward one mate. And if the mind gets involved outside of the marriage, it becomes distracted. The whole course of the individual's life is then altered. Arjuna has the insight to bring that problem to his consciousness. Of all Arjuna's arguments, this one makes the most sense. Perfect understanding between marriage partners is important, and fidelity plays a significant part in that. If fidelity is lost, the values on which the society is erected crumble, and the progeny are weakened. Purity in a marital relationship is a significant factor in sharing a harmonious life together and in giving birth to and raising healthy children. In today's society, fidelity may seem to be a foolish idea. Some Westerners think that fidelity is merely an Eastern more, but that is simply a justification to support irresponsibility. Arjuna's prediction clearly reflects what is taking place in modern society. There does not seem to be harmony between individuals, either within the family or in society. The construction of society is the profound responsibility of its individual members. That responsibility can be fulfilled only when the members of society practice discipline and self-control. For lack of these, arise many mental, emotional, and physiological disorders that consume considerable time and energy. To cure these problems is one of the reasons modern therapy came into existence. But Eastern teachers and therapists believe that prevention is better than cure. One must understand the difference between human civilization and animal life. If a human being runs around irresponsibly like an animal, it shows that discipline and self-control have not been cultivated in his life. Without practicing discipline, one cannot gather his scattered energy, and all his goals will remain dreams that never materialize. Discipline is not a punishment, but a part of growth, without which mental and physical health cannot be maintained. Verses 46 and 47.
Yadi mam apratikaram ashastram shastrapanayaha dhartarashtra rane hanyuhu tanme kshemataram bhave. Sanjaya uvacha. Eva muktva arjunas sankhe ratopasta upavishat. Visrujy sasharam chapam shoka samvignya manasaha.
If the sons of Dhritarashtra, with weapons in hand, kill me in the battle while I am unarmed and unavenging, That will be more beneficial to me. Sanjaya said, Having spoken thus, in the middle of the battle, Arjuna sat down on the seat of the chariot, putting away the bow together with the arrows, his mind agitated with grief. The teachings of the Bhagavad Gita are imparted by Sri Krishna in response to the confusion and despondency of Arjuna. As we have seen, there are many factors that cause Arjuna's despair. 1. He is about to become involved in a heinous war that could destroy the best of men from both camps. 2. The war is between two groups of the same family. 3. Arjuna is fighting against his teachers and elders. 4. He is fighting a fierce battle to regain his and his brother's rights in the mundane world. And 5. Arjuna is afraid of the destruction of the prevailing order of society and its noble traditions. At the crucial moment when the battle is beginning, these thoughts create a serious dilemma in Arjuna's mind. He is so confused that he cannot discriminate and judge what is right and wrong, what is lawful and unlawful. Arjuna's mind is so affected that he completely forgets who he is and what his duties are. Confused and dejected, he sinks into grief and casts his bow and arrow aside. Thus, the first chapter has been called Vishada Yoga, the Yoga of Dejection or Sorrow. The word yoga comes from the Sanskrit root yuj, meaning to unite or to join. Here, the word yoga has been used in a negative way, because Arjuna joins with grief and sorrow rather than with the divine. Patanjali, the codifier of yoga science, describes two kinds of knowledge, right knowledge and wrong knowledge. Right knowledge leads one to positive thinking and experience, whereas wrong knowledge leads one to negativity. Sanjaya's sermon created a negative train of thought in Arjuna's mind. A teacher, counselor, or therapist who is not sincere can misguide and mislead his students. It is important to carefully study the literature, follow the teachings, and practice the methods of a system for self-transformation. If the methods of sadhana are not well organized, systematized, and methodical, one's mental state can become disturbed. One can then sink into the pool of sorrow instead of reaching the garden of perennial joy. Fortunate are those who are determined to follow the path of self-realization with sincerity, determination, and a one-pointed mind under the guidance of a preceptor who is selfless, loving, and has already attained self-realization. The science of yoga is a scientific and practical exploration of the inner life. It is extremely helpful in self-analysis, self-control, and self-transformation. How can one say that it is not suitable and applicable to modern man? Many are prejudiced against the use of yoga psychology because they have only a superficial knowledge of mental life. Their understanding of the human being is fragmented. They have no insight into higher dimensions of consciousness. It is amazing to note that many contemporary Eastern psychologists have been following in the footsteps of other modern psychologists. That is like forgetting reality and chasing a mirage. Although the system developed by yoga science is thorough and complete, many modern scientists are repelled by the word yoga for no good reason. Mere analytical methods and the study of dreams do not help patients much, for they are not taught how to prevent themselves from becoming victims of external stimuli and internal disorganization. If not properly and systematically guided, an aspirant's mental train is either derailed or runs in a direction contrary to its destination. Arjuna was fortunate to have Yogeshwara Krishna as a guide and counselor to bring him out of that situation. Here ends the first chapter in which the despondency of Arjuna is described.